Welcome to Soul Busy. I'm Rach.
And I'm Carly,
your CEO
and COO
sisters. We share unfiltered convo on balancing hustle with mindfulness
while running successful businesses with soul
and the real life between it all.
Today's guest is Ashley Hasiotis, an Amazon best-selling author of The Unspoken and founder of the childhood cancer charity One Mission, which has supported over 60,000 families. Alongside her husband, Ari, Ashley co-owns Rain Car Wash and 30 locations of Seven Brew coffee stands. She blends spirituality, business, and takes no shit mentality, and we couldn't love her more. Welcome, Ash.
I love you too, and thank you for having me.
Welcome. 60,000.
Yeah.
Wow. I was just like, that's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been a long time.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. One Mission is, I feel like, very well known. Like all over the nation?
I think so. I don't know.
No, on the radio.
Are you kidding?
I'll hear you on the radio and I'll tell Joe. I'll tell Joe and he'll be like, you know her, don't you? I'm like, yes. It's a good ad though.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, we used to get, you know, first of all the stuff, all the advertising that One Mission gets, we get for free.
Really? Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, always. So sometimes we would get, you know, anyone who would do the voiceovers for us because we didn't pay for them. And we were never always like 100% like, yeah,
it's you.
Nailed it. So I started doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to just do it yourself.
I hear your voice. It's good. I really like it.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, our opening party of Parlor was all for donation to One Mission.
Yes. Remember this. Yeah.
And you were a huge part of that.
Yeah.
You've actually been a part of my story for so long. So when we had our first location in this building that we're in now, where Parlor is now, I remember I had the long space, the 2,500 square foot space. That's where we met.
Photo shoot.
When I was still doing makeup.
Yeah.
We did your photo shoot there.
Yeah. And you've seen me naked.
Yeah, I've seen you naked. It's beautiful. Beautiful body.
Nice naked body.
Really nice naked body. It's actually funny, like in conversation with people, I've seen a lot of people naked.
I can imagine.
And it's actually, I'm not fazed by it anymore. Like the shit I used to do is so bizarre. And the things I used to say in my salon, I'd be like, just hold your nipple.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like very odd career path I've taken.
I remember feeling so humble that day, but also like having such admiration for models. I had to go home and take a nap.
Oh, it's not
after
easy.
My boudoir
it's
shot.
Miserable.
The way that they have to contort their bodies and hold them, you'd be like, Ashley, just stay. No, up a little bit more. No, now down. Now stay there. And my body would be shaking.
Oh, it's truly scary. An art form. Mm-hmm. And like when you, now that you've experienced it, models move. They like dance. They have like an action to them. It's very interesting, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I'm definitely a model snob at this point. Like, I'm like, I want someone who moves, please. It's fun with Sleepy Tie. So yeah, you are like, I would love for you to tell our audience about your story because you are just like a clusterfuck of like amazingness. There's just so much, like, first of all,
there's a lot there.
You're a psychic. Your child had cancer. You started a crazy, incredible foundation. You help so many children that have cancer in their families. You are owned Cumberland Farms. You sold Cumberland Farms. You now have franchises of two different types of businesses. I mean, like, this is like,
how does this all happen
in a lifetime?
Tell me you're
and
tired.
And also, I think your continued ambition, I think, is what really is very impressive to me.
I want to know about that too.
And I'm like, just, I find you to be impressive in so many areas, and I want everybody to understand your story first.
Oh my God. Love. Well, first of all, it goes both ways. I have huge admiration for both of you. Even my kids, we love them so much. My kids want to come and
I
work
love
for
Nick.
You when they grow. Yeah. I don't know. My story, you know, well, it was born out of, you know, kind of like a shitty childhood, right? That's kind of where the unspoken is really based on my childhood. But I always knew at a very young age, I wanted to be a powerful woman. I did not see my mother as a powerful woman. And for me, that was what I knew. I didn't want what she was.
Interesting.
And God love her and rest her soul. And I have a better relationship with my mom now that she's passed than when she was alive.
Because you've healed.
Totally. I've spent and continue to spend hours upon hours healing that relationship and those wounds. But
if you don't mind, could you tell us like why the childhood was challenging, like in summary?
Yeah, yeah. My mom was emotionally abusive. She abandoned me a lot. And she used her words against me, basically. So it was, you know, whenever, just even small things like, you know, wow, nice zit. Or, you know, like, you're going to go out of the house looking like that. I mean, there was just so many times. And then times where she wouldn't come home. Or I wrote about in one of the chapters in my book was I was playing basketball. I was a volleyball player, but in high school I was playing basketball to stay in shape. And I got terribly injured and I dislocated my knee and the trainer was like, you know, you have to go to the hospital. And so I called my mother from the payphone and I was like, hey mom, like I have to go to the hospital. And she was like, it's snowing out. I'm not coming to get you. Take the bus back to school. And it was really like in that moment, I was full of shame because it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that trainer is like, so is she going to come pick you up? And I was like, no, she can't right now. And I was like, you know, I crutched away and sat with my team on the bench. And, but I remember feeling so
alone,
yeah. But like full of shame. Like, I'm not good enough for you to come pick me up.
That makes me sick.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine as a mother? No. Like, I would never.
No, you know, it's funny. And I have these like thought patterns that run through my head as I'm parenting. And like, I'm in a moment where like maybe somebody's having a tantrum or there's, yeah. You know, like a bad moment. And I think to myself, I'm being 5D, make a joke of it, be silent, be calm.
Yeah.
And I have to like kind of, you know, because when it gets heightened, it's hard. Yeah. But then I think to myself in that thought pattern, what would someone who's not like this do? And I think about abused children and I get very sad. Like in that way, it's like all at once. Because then you, as a mother, you relate to like, it's so easy to like treat somebody incorrectly or like to hurt them. And it makes me so sad, the emotional trauma that can come from that type of motherhood.
Well, that's interesting you say that because I have a lot of sadness for my children, for my own children. They were raised by an unhealthy mom, right?
I
was so full of pain and suffering that...
But you're still raising them.
I was raising kids, but I was, I had no fuse. I had no patience.
Yeah.
I had a short fuse. And I mean, I've cried to them, you know, obviously Nicholas was different cause he was in the hospital. But that only actually made my anxiety worse,
right?
Having had a sick child.
Of course.
So by the time Eleni came around and then Zoe subsequently, I look back on their childhood with sadness that I was not a good mom.
I think there's multiple ways you can look at that. Obviously, I'm going to spin it to the positive that you made beautiful children that like are doing beautiful things in the world and they're really good kids. So at the same time, it's like, have you ever seen the visual on Instagram where it's like how generations heal from trauma?
Yes.
And it's it's like a bunch, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's a bunch of cups. One, the first cup is very dirty water and you watch the clean water entering the dirty water and you see how long it takes for the water to filter out to clean.
Yeah.
You did the work to heal them.
Yeah.
So their water is clean.
100%. And I actually feel really confident in that now. And even my marriage is taking that to the next level. You know, like we both were raised, you know, kind of by animals, Ari and I, and we'll get to that story for Cumberland Farms later. But, you know, we are still healing. So I now can own my stuff with my kids. Like, whoa. I should not have just said that to you.
Yeah. That's real.
That's like totally
real. I respect that. I hate people who sit on their horse and they're like, I'm the best and I'm perfect and I'm never going to say fuck to my child. Right. Like,
well, to that point though, aren't we all always healing?
Like for sure, but not everybody knows it.
Right.
Yeah.
Not everybody does.
I just mean that in the sense like things I've been through in my life that I could categorize as traumatic. As I get older, I have different viewpoints of them. Mm-hmm. So like as I get older and think about that past trauma, I heal differently as I get older.
Yeah.
Oh, again and again and again. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh my God, wow. I can't believe I went through that. And I can't believe I healed from that. And I can't believe I learned that lesson. Let me learn it again.
Totally. But you also knew you weren't going to be the mom that your mom was to you.
I was so set against it, but it's so interesting how often I showed up like her when my kids were little. Like, blah.
Well, how could you show up as anything else?
That's what you were taught.
Modeling is probably
what you were taught.
90% of how we are as people is modeling.
Yeah.
You are kind of where you came from. And, you know, breaking ancestral trauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was one of the things that I think God put me on this earth to do.
Definitely.
It's funny though. Like you really know generationally, like I think my mom was saying, cause my brother Jesse just went to Greece and she told her mom, our grandma, and she was like, why is he going to Greece? Why is he traveling? He doesn't need to travel.
Uh-huh. It's funny, but it's like not funny. Cause she's like, and we not were like, living.
What are you talking about? Like, what? I don't even know. But then
we don't even know how to answer her.
Then we're I like, thought to myself, mean? Oh my God, she doesn't understand it.
Right.
Like, it's just like, that's how well, she that's is. That's
how you have to have compassion because she grew up differently.
Right.
Right. So it's like, I said that to my mom too in that moment. Cause she was like, I think almost complaining that my grandma was not complaining, but just like speaking it. Yeah. And I said to her, I was like, if you think about your generation, mom, like you probably had the craziest transition from like being on the internet and being on social to like not.
Yeah.
And you, what you have access to is so different. Like Mammy wouldn't know that traveling is fun. She doesn't see videos of Greece or photos of Italy or like understand why people are doing that.
It's weird.
All right. So we got off topic. So your childhood.
Yes.
Got it.
Yep. So that's kind of how, so I always knew I wanted to just be this powerful woman. I knew I wanted to make change. I just knew I had a fire in my belly. It's a good way to explain it. Like, I didn't know what my purpose was, but I knew I had a really intense purpose for being here. And so I went to school and kind of got out of school and didn't really, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. Ultimately, I was getting my master's to become a therapist.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, because I was always,
that makes sense.
I was always a
people that totally person. Makes sense.
I get that. Yeah,
right. And then Nicholas got sick. So life just, you know, I have only two classes before I would have had my master's in counseling. And
how old were you when you had Nicholas?
I was 30.
30.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So then I wasn't a therapist. Nicholas got sick. And I'm witnessing all these people.
Sick with what?
Nicholas had cancer when he was a baby, and we were at the hospital. We lived at Boston Children's Hospital for 188 straight days. And the interesting part about that in terms of like how I ended up getting to where I am now is most families stay in the hospital for about 45 days, and then they become outpatient patients through like the Jimmy Fund Clinic. You know, you start off at Boston Children's Hospital, you're still in treatment, and now you're going to the Jimmy Fund Clinic multiple times a week for several hours. But we actually never went home because the kind of treatment that Nicholas had for AML was the more rare form of leukemia. They don't let you go home because you can get so sick very, very quickly. So we stayed there. And so
how old was he?
He was 7 months old when he was diagnosed.
Ashley.
What signs did he show? Like, how did you know?
I don't get how that happens. Like, are you just born with it?
He had cancer in utero, basically.
How? I don't get it. Like
some cell issue. Yes.
So cancer is a cell that doesn't kill itself when it's supposed to.
Right.
Because it's not a right cell. It's not. That's it's not so healthy.
Hard. I mean, like having a 7-month-old.
Yeah.
Is hard.
And you're first.
Yes. Yeah. It was.
You're not even totally healed yet.
No. Like, oh, by the way, no, you're not. But interestingly enough, I don't know if you know this story, but I had done a fundraiser for pediatric cancer before Nicholas got sick. Do you know that story?
No. The irony.
So, it's insanity. So I was in the mortgage business right after. Yeah. So
I knew that.
Yes.
Because of Joel.
That's right.
You knew Joel.
So I was in the mortgage business and I got pregnant, went on maternity leave. And, you know, somewhere around month two, you know, Ari was, I think at the time, in the marketing department at Cumberland Farms. Yep. And so he was coming home and he was talking about all these great things that happened at the office. And I was like, yeah, so Nicholas pooped today and we went to the park and I hate this. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I can't do this. I have to go back to work. And he was like, we talked about this and you're supposed to stay home. We agreed you were going to be a stay home mom. And at the time I'd gone through like two refi booms. So I was like, yeah, I was looking forward to like eating bonbons and spending time with my kids. But it just wasn't enough for me.
I love that eating bonbons is your generation thing.
My mom says that. Bonbons.
Is that like the chocolate covered ice cream?
Yes. I'm sorry. No, remember you could get bonbons the movies.
We're so fat for that.
Yeah.
But I just love that that's
like
a thing.
Where are bonbons?
Dead. They're gone, I think.
They're gone.
Yeah.
Should we?
No.
Make them?
No.
Okay.
No. I think we're good.
Okay.
We can get true fru.
Okay. We'll let them lie.
Well, yeah.
True. All right. Yeah, I was trying to be inventive.
Yeah.
Fuck the bonbons.
Fuck the bonbons.
Fuck those bonbons.
So yeah. So he was like, look, you know, do something like let's meet in the middle. You want to go back to work. I want you to stay home. What about like philanthropy? And I was like young, right? I was 30 years old. I'm like, what the fuck is philanthropy? What are you talking about? And he's like, you know, like help people who are less fortunate. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll look into it. So anyway, the long and short of that is I found St. Jude on the interweb. And I called them up and I was like, look, I want to have an event for you guys. How do I do it? It was so long ago that they sent me a VHS tape.
Stop it.
Dude.
Stop. You're old.
I'm old.
I'm kidding.
So do you remember back? You probably didn't even know this, but we used to have these TVs where the VCR was attached to the TV.
No, okay, you remember that? I know.
Of course. I used to have a white one that I stole from Rachel in my room. Yeah, and I would play 10 Things I Hate About You every day on
and
repeat.
Bring it on. No, always. Totally. I love VHS. I brought VHS tapes to college.
Oh, okay. All right.
With that exact TV.
Okay,
perfect. We had like four movies, you know, like... You know which
I brought 100 VHS tapes to college.
Oh,
all Disney. Continue.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And so I know Ari gets up on the coffee table. We had like 30 friends there. I mean, like, I think maybe we raised like $5,000. And Ari's
still
like,
good.
Yeah, especially for a bunch of 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ari's like, look, can you imagine how awful it would be if one of our children was sick? I think Nicholas was 5 months old at the time. Some of my friends didn't even have kids yet. And so this VHS tape, we played it a couple of times and it was just like all these like sick kids with cancer and we're all bawling. But the more cocktails we had, the more, you know, tearful.
Cocktails and childhood cancer is not fun.
Yeah. And so literally Nicholas is now he's sick, right? And I've been bringing him to the pediatrician and we agree like he's unwell, but we're not quite sure exactly what it is. We think it's a virus. But he was getting a little worse every day, not a little bit better. And now that you have kids, you know, like, they at least get a little better
you know
every
the signs,
day.
Yeah.
And he was getting worse. And so it was May 8th. This is anniversary. And I went to check on him in the morning, and he was covered in bile. And so I scooped him up. And I had just already known, like, the night before, I put him to bed, and I went into my bedroom, pulled the covers over my head. I was sobbing. And Ari was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, Nicholas is sick. I think he has cancer. And he was like, Ashley, like, bite your tongue. You don't know what you're talking about. Like, you're just a first-time mom.
Why did you think that?
Because I knew.
Did you have psychic ability then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's why.
But I also wrote about this in my book, too. For my entire life, from the time I was, like, 10, I used to daydream about... my husband, my tall, dark, handsome husband, we were going to have a love that nobody could break, but he was going to get sick and I was going to will him back to life with
your
my
husband
love.
Was
in my dreams. It was my husband.
Ugh.
It was your son,
but it turned out to be my son. So in the book, I asked the question, like with the laws of attraction, did I bring illness to my son or
I fucking hate that.
Did
thought.
I know? Did I just intuitively know it was going to happen?
Did I manifest it?
Right.
Or did I predict it? We had a whole episode about
don't,
this.
I don't do well with
it
those things.
Tortured. That's a
I'm
torturous
tortured
thought.
By that. Mm-hmm.
That's a very hard thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
You definitely didn't manifest it.
Right. I think it was part of my purpose. And, yeah. And how I know it was part of my purpose is because ultimately we ended up getting Nicholas ended up getting an experimental transplant at St. Jude. So we were originally treated at Boston Children's. We went to St. Jude after he was treated at Boston, where it turned out I was Nicholas's match, which is very, very rare. And I won't get into
for
the details.
What? Blood? What?
For a transplant of his natural of my natural killer cells. So in the long and the short of it, for people who are listening, to be a bone marrow donor, it's one out of every four kids is a match to the other siblings, right? Parents are typically never a bone marrow match for a child.
Interesting.
But for the natural killer cells, it's called a KIR mismatch. I don't remember what KIR stands for, but basically you want the donor to be a mismatch, not a match, so that your cells...
They complete each other.
No. My cells went into Nicholas's body and found his cancer as foreign and killed it.
Got it.
Because my cells
are different.
Right. Are different.
You had to do the bone marrow?
So it wasn't bone marrow. It was, they took all my blood out. They kept the white, gave me back my red. And then they filtered out my natural killer cells from my white blood cells.
Wow. That's insane.
That's wild so, like, science.
It's crazy. We were the fifth in the country to ever do that. Yeah. So you think about like, okay, what was my purpose? I have so many purposes. One of them was to be Nicholas's mother so that I could save his life. I think
100%.
I mean, got, yeah, like the chills like 15 so. Times.
What a crazy story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then when did One Mission start?
So One Mission was born out of like, so we thought we were in the hospital and I just, again, I'm a helper. So I'm looking at all these families around me and I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like they are poor. Even if they didn't start off poor, they're now poor. because they have all these co-pays, paying for hospital bills, trying to take care of their homes. Now one mom or dad or whatever
isn't working.
So they're down half the income, but now the bills are going up. So, and then the hospital was barren. Like, it was boring, barren place. So I had a legal pad, and I would just like, I don't know if I was like journaling back then or what I was doing, but I just wrote down everything I hated and everything that I saw that I needed to fix.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that's your purpose, because who else goes into a situation like that thinking about how they could fix it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what a beautiful ending though.
Yeah. Honestly.
And he's okay.
Nicholas is, he's going to be starting college in January.
Right. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Wow. They gave him a 50-50 shot. He would live 6 months. And he's 19.
Wow.
4 weeks, actually, yeah. So anyway, so that was the first part of the story, right? And then, but meanwhile, right, like, how did Ashley get into the coffee business? How did Ashley support her husband while he ran Cumberland Farms? And how did I start One Mission?
Well, yeah, let's talk. Yeah, I want to talk about all of that.
I think, and again, I talk a lot about this in my book, but I was driven by this little motor inside called anxiety and feelings of not being good enough, and really and truly wanting to prove to the world that I was a good person, because I was raised to believe that I wasn't. And so I was doing all of these things in my life. Like, I didn't know I was doing it for that purpose, but I was doing it so that I could prove to everybody that I was a good person. And I wanted people to like me. Again, I didn't know that at the surface level. But when you're told that you're not good enough all the time, or when you're abandoned and left behind, as a child, you inherently believe that you aren't worthy of love, and that you aren't lovable, and that you aren't good enough the way that you are. And so it's just this thing that was like driving me. Now, anxiety can be good because it can give you fuel. But what happened for me was that anxiety took over. Mm. And because I had had so much trauma, I was very sensitive. My psychic abilities were very heightened, and I could not help anybody who was in trouble. It didn't matter what, whether they were.
Well, you were convicted to help.
I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And it was really because I was so fearful. Like, their trauma just re-triggered my trauma. And
it's like a rotation.
Mm-hmm. And so I was unable to trust that no matter what, they were going to be okay.
You like couldn't settle it.
I couldn't. And so I killed myself jumping backwards. Like, think about all the portraits that you couldn't say no to at the end, right before you, right? You know this person, you know that person. Well, I was always the person everybody called for help.
Right.
And so
I try not to do that to you.
Oh,
when I hear it. No. I actually am very actively, when I hear a story, I actually don't reach out for that anymore. Like, I've heard a few and I'm like, you know what? It's not your role to like save the world. But I think that is the role you made. And so that made it.
Do you like that role? Like, or like now looking back, like, is you did that, you're still doing that?
So I'm always going to be who I am.
Yeah.
But now I have boundaries. I didn't have boundaries before.
Yeah. It's challenging.
It's a huge, huge comfort to my nervous system to be able to, one, also the biggest thing is to just trust that I know that their plan is their plan. And
faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that like they're actually going to be okay no matter what happens.
Yeah. That's a very hard concept to digest.
I can't save them from pain.
Right.
I can't save them from suffering.
Well, it's kind of like this rotation of like also karma manifesting. It's like, if I help them, I'm helping me, but you're not doing it not selflessly, but like if you give, then you're safe. But it's like that's a bad place to be. It's like a ping pong.
Yep.
But it doesn't, not to say that your actions aren't genuine and that you weren't wanting to help. Right. It's just like, it was like a subconscious loop you were almost stuck in.
Well, the beginning years of One Mission, I honestly felt like I was giving back to God for saving Nicholas.
I understand that.
I feel like I thought he gave me One Mission and it was so successful and I was meeting all these families because it was his way of saying, I did this for you, now you do this for me.
And showing you the way.
No, now I feel like I understand that concept, but before.
You're saying in the moment you didn't feel it that way.
In the moment I felt like I was giving back to God because that's what he wanted me to do.
Like, yes. Understanding. Like you're almost like kind of guilt, kind of, because you're like, you gave me this, I need to do this for other people.
Yes, an exchange.
Yes. And it was, I had a breakdown, hence the book is a lot about my breakdown. And I remember calling my priest for last rites.
When was the breakdown?
So it was all those migraines. It was 2019.
Oh, that's what I thought. I remember the vertigo. Unwell.
Yes, the vertigo, the migraines, the vomiting. I couldn't leave my house. I literally.
It was like your body was like purging.
It shut down.
Yeah.
My body shut down.
Was your mom alive during this time?
No.
No.
She'd already passed.
She already passed.
Yep. And so I remember calling my priest. He came and he's just such an amazing guy. And he just asked me the question, like, why do you feel like you have to help all these people?
What an interesting question from a priest.
Right?
I find that to be ironic and very helpful. Well, of course, I started
bawling my eyes out because I was like, oh, now he's going to see me. Right? And so he very casually explained to me that, like, that God's plan for us isn't always puppy dogs and ice cream.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And there's a whole purpose to everybody's plan, and I can't save people from their plan. And it's not even what God wants me to do. God doesn't want me to give back for saving Nicholas. He saved Nicholas for Nicholas because that was not Nicholas, for me.
You. I think also, though, at a certain point, it's like when you're not in that loop, it's like, when do you just get to be? Mm-hmm. Just be. Yeah. Like, you have also a beautiful life. Yeah. And it's just like at some point, like, you know, we change. You can only give so much without stripping down yourself. Yeah. And like, you have to know those boundaries to know when you're stripping that down.
I think in a way though, one mission is the way to help as many people as you can.
Well, you made it automated too. So it's like, nice. It lives on.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, no matter what you do, it lives on. It's just, you made that, but it doesn't always have to take your energy, your soul.
Right.
That's also another way to say it is scalability.
Totally.
Like you delegate to elevate and you keep moving on, which is, you know, it's business. It just is the way it is. Business.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. Well, at the tail end of my time at One Mission, I was, you know, doing Reiki.
Yeah.
And I was giving it to free to the parents. And that's kind of how my spiritual practice and my spiritual job, if you will, became a thing, because then they were telling their friends and family. So I would open up my practice to their friends and family, but then I would charge them. And so then my Reiki business became a business versus.
I remember that when we talked about it in the conference room, that's now a sink area. Remember?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yep.
Yeah. And I loved it at the time. Again, even though I was a spiritual person and on my path of healing, I didn't realize how damaged my nervous system truly was from all of the trauma.
Yeah.
And so me having all of those clients, and by the way, I got some of, and I wrote about this in my book too, some of the most intense stories. I'm talking like Lifetime Television for Women stories that would show up in my office, and I was re-traumatizing myself every time.
Andrew Tanner, trained me for a year. I know, he told me.
Yeah.
He once said to me, he was like, if people really knew what Reiki was, I don't know if they'd offer it or do it. Mm-hmm. And I never understood that until literally right now when you just said that. Yeah. Because it's like, I think we offered Reiki at Parler.
Yeah.
And we had to stop because it became too much of an intense energy exchange.
Well, I think people expect something,
and
too.
Yeah, they expect like different level of healing.
Yeah, like I literally went to acupuncture yesterday and he was like, I'm not Jesus and I'm not a magician.
Yeah.
And he was like, so don't like look at me like that. And it just made me think of that because like I think that's what happened with Reiki is people were like, heal me.
Yes.
Make this person love me.
And then tell you everything.
Yeah.
And which is really dumping on you. Yeah.
Well, it's so interesting because I keep saying I wrote about this in my book. I did. You know, we talked about this earlier, the concept of like your path, right? And not everybody actually signs up for a earthly life of healing, even though we're always healing. Mm-hmm. Some people don't know and they're not actively participating in that. And sometimes those are the people that come to you and lay on your table and say, heal me.
I believe
that's a tough conversation.
You have to have people in your corner who are self-aware enough to tell you that you like, I probably wouldn't have been someone to heal unless I had her.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't. Like, I don't know what I would be like.
Yeah.
Her, or my dad are like people that like are honest with me and like not like sugarcoat.
Yeah.
So I think I agree with you that I don't think people are always healing even though they're on that path.
Yeah.
or trying to, or understand that they need to.
It might not be their dharma either to,
totally.
Like, that's just their life. Well,
that's 100%. It's not what they came here to do. It, you know, ignorance is bliss. That is actually some people's lives.
It's a form of ignorance. And not in a bad way.
It just is. And so those people, I swear, they were coming to me. They weren't doing the homework I was giving them. And so every time they would come, I would give my everything to relieve their pain and suffering in that moment, which, I mean, there was a joke at a cocktail party recently, like, Ashley, how many people have you healed? And I was like, we don't have enough time, right? Like,
you literally don't have enough time.
I literally don't have enough time to tell you. Some people, miraculous healings, and others, just general.
You also brought those people into your home, into your some own space. Only some
clients. I had an office in the one mission space. Good. So only people like you I would let come to my house.
Yeah, I mean, your Reiki was powerful.
Yeah.
You told me crazy shit.
Yeah. So that part of my spiritual journey was really, I think, the beginning of the end and the beginning of my crash and burn.
Well, I mean, when I see it from the plane, I think it all makes perfect sense.
Right.
Right. Like, it's like you're depleted.
Yep.
Now you're going to add energy healing with people who maybe aren't healing or are healing or want to or don't want to, but you're giving your all because you feel like you should.
Yep.
And you also feel like you can. And you also feel like you have the capability to do that. That's a crash and burn
100%.
Recipe.
Yeah.
And I even think the crash and burn was part of your path.
Oh, it absolutely was.
I think you might have needed it.
I needed the crash and burn. My family needed the crash and burn. Because I needed to heal myself. I needed to literally be broken down into like 100 pieces so that I could actually see myself for who I was.
From above. Yeah.
How long did it take you to get back up? Like, after you felt like you crashed? Like,
many years. So I was very sick 2019. It started the end of the summer 2018. Believe it or not, I actually think I hit my head. So I had multiple concussions in my life, and I hit my head at the beginning of the summer, which I think, if you know enough about CTE, migraines, vertigo, it's kind of like an ongoing issue when you don't heal your brain. Who knows why it started or where it came from? Either way, by the time Christmas rolled around of 2019, I was a shell of a human being.
I distinctly remember seeing you in the salon and feeling awful because I felt like there was no solution I could give you that you hadn't tried.
Yeah.
I'm a solution giver. Yeah, yeah. And like, that's good and bad at the same time. But it's like, I saw in your eyes, you were like
sick.
You were just at a loss. Yeah. You were just like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing this person. I'm going to try this. Yes. Like, you're a problem solver. It's just like, I think that was a hard thing. The vertigo is really tough.
It's awful.
I had a period of vertigo leading up to my pregnancy, and I think it came from extreme stress.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why aren't I getting pregnant? Yeah. And da 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 da. And I was like dizzy, and I'm like falling over, and then it went away.
Yeah.
And when I healed.
Yeah, totally.
It's just very interesting. It's like, if you listen to the signs of your body.
100%. The body keeps score. The body
can talk to you. Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the best books, The Body Keeps Score. So ironically enough, vertigo, migraines are actually in the same part of your brain as anxiety and stress.
Mm. Well, that checks out.
Yeah. That's exactly why most people experience dizziness when they have anxiety and they don't know they're having anxiety. They just feel dizzy.
It's like your vagal.
Yeah.
It's like shutting down almost. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Well, it's your brain and it's how it's processing the information. And if it gets on overload, it'll just go kaputs and the signals aren't right.
Right.
So I think that, you know, I found a pain coach who, I mean, I ultimately needed to like surrender to the fact that I had chronic pain.
Right.
There was, at that point, there was no getting rid of my migraines.
Yep.
I had them every single day. My longest migraine was 73 days. I mean, literally, you open up your eyes.
What?
And boom, you have a headache. Yeah.
That's horrible.
It's insanity.
Terrible.
How do you even function?
How do you function?
I didn't. I wasn't functioning very well, although I was, you know, I wasn't having the spinning of the room and myself at the same time vertigo anymore, but I was still not well.
It's funny. I put myself in your shoes just for a second just now. And I was like, how do you handle that? And my first response was my mom in my head. So I thought to myself, I would need my mom. And then I thought to myself, start rounding the story out. That wouldn't be your response.
Right.
So it's kind of funny. I read a study once that said the people that live the longest or like have like the support system or like the people that are, it's like you didn't have who could support you in that moment?
Well, lots of people would say, oh, well, she had her husband, but I actually didn't at the time. And that's
a whole other phase of his career.
That's another part of the book too, which, you know, again, why did I get sick? What was this part of? It was part of my journey, my life purpose, but also my husband's.
Yeah. Right? Totally. I get that.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, if you don't feel like a safety net, like if there isn't someone that can actually physically hold your weight for like a day, then I would imagine you crash. Yeah. Like, it's like, 'cause where are you going to fall? You have no one to fall onto.
Yeah.
And if he couldn't support you in that moment, I understand.
Yeah.
What, was that he imbalance over Cumberland Farms there?
No, no. He was already the president, but the company was in the process of being sold, but we just couldn't tell anybody.
Understood.
So he was in the most stress of his entire life.
That sounds extremely stressful.
But he also wasn't raised to be caring and loving and empathetic.
Interesting.
So he actually didn't even, I don't think if he was not selling the company, he would have known what to do with me.
Right. I understand what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I was so unwell. And he was scared by it too.
Of course. Like, he also doesn't know like what to do.
He did not.
Well, he wasn't used to that from you either. So like, that was a complete 180 for him. And I think boys are just different than girls in general.
100%.
And when, like, I sometimes wouldn't want Joe and I would want my mom or my sister. You know what I mean? Like, husbands have a place in people's lives, but it's not always
every bubble.
Right? Yeah. Like, sometimes I'm just like, you're not for me right now. I'm going to go get what I need from somebody else. Yeah. And I feel for you that you didn't have that.
Yeah, no, I didn't have that. And I was also like secondarily traumatized by the fact that my husband wasn't showing up for me.
Right. I think it was just like, it sounds anger. Dizzy. Like I'm dizzy thinking about that scenario. I think like, your as body you brought was me there.
Yeah. Rejecting everything you were doing. Yeah. Like, I think it was like, you are focusing on way too many people. So, and I need you for myself.
Yeah.
I've never seen that in a physical reaction though. I guess maybe I have just not noticed it.
I just think you just don't know.
You just don't realize it.
You don't correlate. She's just spiritually bound so she can correlate. And now looking back, say it.
Yeah. And so, you know, 2020, I started feeling comfortable going out for dinner. Like,
not the irony.
Well, I was like afraid to leave my house. And that was the irony, because you couldn't go out. Well, and then so I was really just, COVID was a huge gift for me because I wasn't ready to really go out any place. And I was getting better to the point where I could function every day, but I wasn't forced to leave my house because we couldn't. And that's when I wrote the book. Like, it just kind of by accident happened.
Yeah.
I had no plan on writing a book. But I just detailed like my whole life and put it all down on paper, and being that helped me put myself back together.
It like probably healed you because you were like talking about it.
Well, yeah.
Sharing my story.
People probably related or still relate to your story too. And that always makes you feel not alone.
Yeah.
Well, I look at journaling as a form of my own therapy.
Yeah.
Like when I journal, or like I just let my pen go and like I'm in touch, or like I'm having one of those like really weird moments and it's flowing, I feel like I read it back to myself and I'm able to like analyze myself from the outside.
Yeah.
So I bet you that book was so cathartic for you because you were able to like almost your whole life up until that point.
Yeah.
Empty it.
Yeah.
Put it on paper and then carry on.
You know, it's also nice for people to know your story because you have so many people close to you. So it's like they're like weaning off of you to get help, but like you're dealing with your own thing. And it's nice for people to know that you didn't just these things weren't just given to you.
Totally. Yeah, and there's a lot of work that went into it.
It wasn't just like, here's Cumberland Farms and here's a great husband and here's a child and here's these businesses. Like, it wasn't like that.
No. Yeah.
Let's talk about Cumberland Farms.
Sure.
I find it interesting. Like, huge business.
Huge business.
Weren't you responsible for the coffee?
Yeah, that's please. Is that true?
Please talk about that. Is that true? Because I say that.
So yeah, you should say that because
we'll
say
it.
So my husband Ari's grandparents started Cumberland Farms. I actually never worked.
Like,
there.
Was it a small business?
Wait, how'd they start it? I'm so interested.
And milk delivery.
What?
So they would deliver milk to like the homes around where they lived in Cumberland, Rhode Island.
Oh,
Cumberland Rhode Farms. Island. Yes,
I never. Yeah. Correlated that. I thought it was a because we didn't always have them in Massachusetts, now that I'm thinking about
the
it, right?
The first store was in Bellingham, Mass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
So keep milk. Going.
Keep so going. They were delivering milk. And I might get some of these details wrong, but my father-in-law was one of 8 children, and the boys were like doing the milk delivery and milking the cows. And one of them, I forget which one, basically came home one day and was like, this is ridiculous. We're driving to everybody. Why don't we make a store and have them come to us? So then it was like milk, cheese, bread, something like that. And the first store was in Bellingham, and then it just continued to go from there. And
very
so,
funny how it evolved.
Oh, it's
funny
insanity.
That it wasn't like a grocery store, but it kind of was, I guess, and gas.
Well, it's interesting because when you look at Cumberland Farms now and what you guys turned it into, I mean, it has food. Like it has.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well that was Ari. So, so when we first met, I'm from Framingham, right? So
didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm from Framingham.
Like Framingham High School?
Yeah.
No, like I didn't know that.
You're lying.
No, I swear.
I didn't know that.
Wait, what are you talking about?
Okay. So anyway, so I'm from Framingham. And so when I met Ari, he would talk about Cumberland Farms, like it was like the best thing since sliced bread. But I grew up all thinking it was a franchise. And so I just thought it was a franchise. So in my mind, I'm like, yeah, bro, like, cool. You have a couple of stores, like settle down. And so
where'd you meet him?
So I worked at Finley Michael's, which was a restaurant. It's actually a CVS now in Framingham on Route 9, next to Stop and Shop. And he used to come in all the time. And he asked me out one day.
You mean like the one on Temple Street?
Yeah.
That's my CVS.
Yeah.
Wow. It's so fun to be like hot and someone asks you to like date them.
Yeah. He interviewed me first. Like we could do a whole podcast.
Just at a store.
We should do a whole podcast. Ari should come in and we can do a husband-wife podcast.
Has that ever
podcast.
Happened to you? Has anyone come to you in a store and been like, hey, you want me to take you out?
I mean, like really creepy, weird men, but not like anyone that's like a candidate.
Right. That's
the only person that ever did that to me was Michael Shifter.
Well, see.
Here you are.
That's all I ever needed.
It did happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, once I realized that he was like, you know, had this like love affair with Cumberland Farms, I was like, bro. Enough. And he was like, what are you talking about? He's like, my grandparents started the company. We own the whole thing. And I was like, oh.
Hi.
You're like, oh, got ding, 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 got
now
it.
I understood. Understand. And that's when I left.
Left.
Ari.
What? Like you broke up with him?
I broke up with him.
Are you good, bro?
Seriously. I was like, oh, no, I can't do that.
I love you for that, though.
He was like, so mature. We're the same age, but he was so mature.
Like different phases of your life.
No, he was like my friends called him grandpa.
I
love drove a Lincoln Town car.
Love a grandpa.
He was like, he didn't party. He never did drugs.
I like him.
He was like, and he worked.
Straight.
He was in it to win it. And once I realized, I was like, it reminded me of like Dallas. Remember the TV show Dallas? Oh my God, you guys are so much younger than I am. Anyway.
I know even Stevens.
Don't even know that. So anyway, I realized like, oh my God, these people are like legit. Like that's not who I was. I wasn't born wealthy.
Intimidated or just,
yeah
I was intimidated. Like they are not legit.
They are never going to accept me. I don't even want to do that world.
I get that. Like a rejecting before you like even enter. You're like,
too
you know
serious
what?
For
just
you.
No.
Just too much. Like
I get that.
I just pictured this like glamorous before the Kardashians were even a thing. I pictured the Kardashians, right? I was like, oh, I can't do that. They're not gonna accept me. I don't know how to do that life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I broke up with him and we were broke up for like 8-9 months, something like that. We worked at the same gym. And so I'm like on the treadmill one day and I'm running and he was like a little nerd. He walks in and I'm like, oh my God, he's so stinking cute.
Wait, that's how Mike and I started dating.
At
the gym.
Oh my God. Huh. Fascinating. Yeah. So anyway, I called him up and I was in the mortgage business at that point. And
do you need a mortgage?
Yeah. I cold called him because we agreed on our first date that we were going to stay together, even if we were going to stay friends no matter what. And we didn't. And that was my fault because I wigged out and I fucking freaked out. And I was like, I got to go. So anyway, I called him up. We went back out on a date. We both had significant others or boyfriends at the time. Well, I had a boyfriend, he had a
cheater.
Yep. Slug. And so we were out for dinner and he was like, look, like I want to know like why you're calling me after all this time.
I love that he went.
Oh, he pushed his plate forward and everything.
Well, you also ditched him. So he's probably like,
he ignored my call. And he wasn't going to pick me up. So I called him and I was like, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. I got him to say yes to the date. And then like days went by and he didn't like call to confirm. So I called him back and I was like, hey, like, were you going to blow me off? And he was like, 100%. And I was like, no, dude, you're not blowing me off. You're picking me up tomorrow at 7. So anyway, pushes his plate forward and he's like, you know, why are you calling me after all this time? And I was like, well, do you want me to be honest? And he was like, yeah, I was like, because I missed you. And we said we were going to be friends. So even if we don't go any further, like, I want to be your friend. And he was like, huh. And I was like, well, what do you mean by that? And he was like, well, when we get married, will you live on my family's property? And I was like, wait, what?
What?
I was like,
what kind of question is that?
I want to live on the property.
He knew from day one that he wanted to marry me.
What's the property like?
It's like, yeah, it's a long story.
Can you take a pound?
Yeah, it's where I live.
That's the property?
Yeah, it's a huge property.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to come over.
You should come over.
Okay.
Well, her house some is coffee.
Fucking phenomenal.
So anyway.
It's a masterpiece.
Yeah. So Ari's now right at Cumberland. So bringing it all full circle. So he's at Cumberland. I'm now running the nonprofit.
Picking the coffee.
And I am in the mortgage business. Right? Right? So this is that time frame.
Yep.
And I was a Dunkin' girl. I actually gave this speech to the National Convenience Store Associations.
Like, I didn't know that was an association.
Yeah. To like a huge, like they were like 3,000 people there, and I told this story. And so he'd be like, well, why don't you just stop at Cumberland and get coffee? And I'd be like, because your coffee sucks. It's fucking gas station coffee. I'm not drinking your coffee. So I was like, you need real coffee. You got to turn this place around. You got to get some real coffee. So for months, he and his team were scouting out beans. Mm-hmm. So he would come home like all proud, and he would have me taste test this cup. And I would always pick Dunkin'. And so he couldn't find it. So one day he comes home, gives another taste test. And I was like, this one, that's the Dunkin' one, right? He's like, no, yes. He's like, I got it.
What is
I
it,
got
New
it.
England or something?
No, I don't even know where they get it now from, but we literally got like, they're like, it's from a different country. Yeah. It's not from around
it's
here.
It's good coffee. Yeah. The beans.
So, yeah.
I love the setup though.
Oh my gosh.
And the cost.
Make it your way.
Yeah.
Make it, you know, because that's a problem with.
Mike went there every morning.
And bullied me
before
actually.
Before I knew
why
you.
Do you spend coffee?
Every morning.
No, he was like, coffee. Your Starbucks $5. This is no, 99 cents.
We're like Cumberland Farms people. Like my dad only gets gas for his entire company at Cumberland Farms. Yeah. He has like a smart system.
Pen. The smart pen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I used in high school, I used to fill up my tank at Cumberland Farms. Yes,
so did I.
On him.
Yeah.
It was great.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I used to pay for gas in cents in like a little Ziploc bag when I was in high school at Cumberland Farms.
Oh, and I was like, what? Got it. I was like,
I got into I got into my first car accident right in front of a Cumberland Farms, the one right around the corner. It used to be from here where the nail polish
place
is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I actually walked into a Cumberland Farms store to call my father to tell him I got into a car accident. And then I ended up marrying the guy whose family owns Cumberland Farms.
Yeah. That's very odd. It's foreshadowing.
So are you close with your dad? I know that's very. Random. Yeah, you okay.
Yeah, he does sound.
He does sound baths.
Yeah,
he works. He's in facilities, like a head of facilities at Hudson Public Schools.
Were your parents together?
No, my parents got divorced when I was five.
Five.
Yeah. So that's a whole other thing. Yeah. But yeah, so I think, you know, like the story kind of just kept unfolding of like yet another thing to do. And you asked me originally, like, well, how does one person do all of these things? I love building. Like I love
You're
people.
Fueled by it.
I love people.
I mean, hi, that's what Soul Busy means?
Yeah.
It's literally what this podcast is about. It's like, that's a question I'm asked every day is how can you do it all?
Yeah.
And honestly, the first answer is boundaries.
Yep.
And that's you already hit on that. Yep. It's like, how can you have to figure out what works for you, mm-hmm. but you also have to be fueled from your soul on what you're doing.
You have
and
to be
you
passionate.
Are.
Yeah.
You just have to be passionate about it. Like, it's like, my friend was telling me yesterday, it was like her first day back from work after she just had her first kid.
Aww.
And she's going to work. She's like crying. Yeah. And she's like, I don't know how you, she was asking me about you and like how you go to work every day. I'm like, Rachel is so passionate about her job. It's like, it's different.
Fucking love
it,
my
like,
job.
It's just like you, when you love it and you want to go, like it's not a chore.
Yeah. No, I'm not sad. And I have to say, I don't really think about my kids during the day. I don't mean that negatively. I just like, I'm embedded in my, like right now, I'm like, I'm in this conversation. I'm loving it. I'm present. I'm here. Like you have to be that in order to do all the
and
things.
And you can love both. Like you can love your kids and your life and all your businesses. Mm-hmm. I want to get into your franchising though.
Okay.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make one point that I find very interesting of the story up until now.
Make the point.
Well, like Cumberland Farms, like a huge business. Mm. Like you also could have just sat pretty and like chilled.
Yeah.
Right? Like I find,
that is true.
I just think it's like commendable, you know, like you had that choice. That path was there.
Well, I didn't ever work for the company, but I think Ari would, and he tells people a lot that like I helped him.
Of course.
Right.
Well, like
a man is not a man without a woman.
You have the ideas.
Yeah. We made a lot of decisions together. Like he would come home and be like, okay, this logo, this color.
Oh, to me, I consider you that you did work there, whether you were on the payroll or not. I see it as like energetically you were on the payroll.
Yeah. There was, I mean, it was my idea to come up with President's Club. You know,
it
was,
yeah, that's,
it was so, I loved it. And you know, to be in business now, I mean, we could do a whole podcast on being in business with your husband, with your partner.
I'm sure my mom would love to discuss that.
Oh my God, that'd be so fun. I would love to do that with her. There's not a lot of couples that successfully do that. And I can honestly tell you it's not that easy.
No, it's definitely, I watch it firsthand.
It would be hard,
not easy
for me to like be sexual with my husband if 100%. We were in work together.
Yeah, like if you're pissed at something they did, but then like he's on top of you, it's like, it's kind of hard.
No, yeah. Not for me.
I don't mean sit pretty like that. I mean, like, everybody has an option, a choice of like how they're going to handle their day. Like, you, like, Cumberland Farms is a successful business. Like, yeah. You could have chosen to like not
be in a beach in Aruba.
You could have been doing a million things. And like, you are still fueled by your passion, by everything you do.
Why?
Because that's just who I am.
Because it's your core make, it's your genetic makeup. Yeah. It's just like, that's who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was never somebody who just sat around and
did nothing
anyway.
Well, you don't eat bonbons. You don't sit and do bonbons.
No bonbons. Although I think at one point I thought it would have been really, really cool to do that. But then that little fire is just drives you, you know, if you are connected to your soul. And from I used to, in high school, we were meditating. We were wearing crystals in high school. So, you know, me and my peeps, like, we were into that whole thing.
That's cool.
So we knew, I was already starting the connection. Yep. I was going to psychics. Connection I was going to healers very, very young.
That's very early, too, for not having, like, so much exposure to internet and whatnot. And, like, having, like, the types of books that are out now.
We didn't
like,
even have phones.
Yeah.
There wasn't even a flip phone.
Yeah. LOL.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. This was even before pagers. So let's have.
I love those pagers.
My dad had Nextel.
Yeah.
Oh, Nextel.
Yeah, I love those things.
Me too. The yellow.
Yeah, with the black button.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I think that it was just something I was driven to do. I am, you know, we talk a lot now, like with our car washes and with the coffee stands, like my eyes are like globes. And this happens no matter where I am. Like, I see everything. That's why.
I actually think they, like, are, like, globes. No, like, literally, sometimes when I look in your eyes, like, I see, like, there's another world. There's, like, something else happening there. Oh, like, and it's happened this whole podcast. Carly says it, too. But, like, I'm looking at you, and I see, like, there's
I feel
so
like
much.
You think things about me. That's what I'm thinking.
There's so.
I hate it.
What do you think she's thinking about?
Nothing. I like feel like she things? Knows my things.
Oh my God. Like
there's only things? Two people that's ever
but
happened in my
life. She's not always tuning in like that. She's right. just like having
listening.
A conversation.
I think you're just listening.
Yeah.
She's just focused on what you're saying. She's not like thinking, I know what's going to happen to Carly tomorrow.
I think she does.
She doesn't. I mean, unless you do.
No. I try to only tune in either when I'm asked or when I feel called for it. But anyway, so my little attention to detail, like, you know, I take pictures. Like, I'm at a Starbucks in the bathroom. Like, I see what's happening in the corners of the floors and of the ceilings.
Oh, I'm the same way. I really am. I'm attention to detail.
That's how I ended up getting so involved at Cumberland. Because I would go to the stores and I'd be like taking pictures
of things. But that's a job.
Like, but you also have such a like strong opinion that's respected. So it's like, I would, if I were Ari, is it Ari?
Ari.
I always
are
say
you
Ari.
Just saying
either one.
I say Ari.
That's fine.
It's Ari.
Do you have like an accent?
His name is Aristides. So his
is
name
it Greek? Ari.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So his name is really Ari, but because nobody could ever pronounce that,
Ari.
He introduces himself as Ari. Because he just, it's easy.
You're not originally Greek though, are you?
No.
Did you have a Greek wedding?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Cool.
So awesome.
People threw the money at you?
Yeah, money, plates.
I just, it's cool.
It was cool. I went to a very Greek wedding the other day, last week.
The crowns, everything's in
3 weeks ago. I don't know. It's crazy though.
So
anyways, I don't remember what I was saying.
So yeah, so she was just closing the loop on Cumberland because you wanted to go to Seven Brew. But, you know, I don't even know what it would be like to not be involved and to not be a boss.
Yeah. I love that.
By the way, the hardest part of being a franchisee is not being the boss.
Interesting.
So you're not the boss of the franchises.
You bought. So hold on. Let's transition. So Cumberland Farms is sold.
Correct.
You guys sell the business.
Sold the business.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you happy with that?
Yes and no. I mean, there was concerns about the security of the gasoline business, and that's where the majority of the money came from, right? You know, plug in your car nowadays.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting
business. You make your margins on the gas. You don't make your margins on the Twinkies and the coffee.
Right. Or Twix.
Or the Twix, yeah.
Or sour watermelon patches.
Are you good?
Yeah.
I think she's hungry.
I'm hungry. Very hungry. She psychically knew that I was extremely hungry.
I mean, I just knew. Yeah. So I think it, you know, it was very, very, very sad for my husband.
I always wondered that. Like, it must be, because it's so personal. He burst it from the ground with his family. That's hard.
Yeah. Well, he didn't build it from the ground. He was given a gift from his family to run the business that he ultimately turned from, like, a cute little rock that's beautiful to a piece of gold.
Understood.
Right? That's how I understood it, right? Like, the transformation of what he did with the company, you know, SmartPay, the stores, the new logo, everything.
That's what always bothered me about when, I don't know if you remember this, when people shit on Kylie Jenner for being like the first billionaire or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I think you and I were aligned on this. Like I like made a post and I was like, you guys are all shitting on her saying she was handed something, but you can be handed something and do nothing with it. 100%. You can be handed something and drive it to the ground.
Bitch builds a legacy.
Just because someone is given something, like, you know, I'll say the, you know, actually I'm not going to say that name, but like, you can be handed something and not do well with
100%.
It doesn't mean you're just automatically successful. Yeah, so agreed. Like, he turned it into gold. 100% he deserves that credit.
He does. And he does. And I give him a lot of credit for that. I remind him often. It's a sad, he misses his people badly. And, you know, he probably knew, I think there was, when we sold the other 600 plus stores, he knew every manager by name.
Wow.
He wrote very impressive anniversary letters personally with his own hand to every manager.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's really something. He can't go into the stores because he gets very, very sad. Really? And plus it's not being very well run right now. And that's sad for him.
Can
too.
You get it back? Like, how does that work?
At this point,
you just don't.
It would just be too much.
Be going backwards in time.
It'd be going backwards in time, and it would be another 10 years of fixing.
It's the third person after I've heard
just got it,
about selling that they like had a hard time after selling.
Yeah.
That's you're the third.
Well, it was his
person.
Whole identity.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I get that.
I mean, this man was like up on stage at Foxwoods with 1,700 people shooting t-shirts out of a gun, pyrotechnics, people screaming his name, Ari, like waiting in line to meet him. What? Like, oh yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. He gave his heart and soul to those employees and they really, really respected and admired him. And can you imagine what that would feel like to just go from that to like literally slamming on the brakes and having
because
no employees?
Forget about all the smoke and mirrors you just described. Well, not smoke and mirrors, like the excitement you just described. I don't know how I'd fill my time if I didn't have like this passion or this purpose. Totally. Like I really enjoy that. I really enjoy having something to do.
Yeah. Well, that's how we got Seven Brew because I got bored.
So let's talk about, we sell Cumberland Farms and then you guys go into the franchise business.
Well,
so now,
we started with the car wash business. So
how many car washes do you own?
Just two.
Two. Okay.
Sorry, three. Sorry.
Three car washes. Yes.
Where are they?
Cranston, Rhode Island is the first one. Wareham, Mass. Is where the other two are.
Get
so right next to Framingham. Where it is. Trying for Framingham.
Yeah, love what it was. That's where I saw it. Yes. We got off on the exit and there was traffic on the way to the Cape one day and we went off and we were like, oh my God, Water Whiz. And I was like, wow, Water Whiz seemed so much cooler when I was younger. And then the next thing down was rain. And I was like, oh my God, it's rain.
Yeah.
That's my whole story.
There you go.
Continue.
Good, good. Yeah, so we decided we were going to do the car wash businesses first. So that's what we did. And they take a long time to build. Because you have to find the land, the buildings take a long time. And meanwhile, of that process unfolding, Ari had a connection to Jimmy John. And Jimmy John was a big investor in Seven Brew at the beginning. And so Jimmy John brings us Seven Brew. And, you know, we're in Florida. We're basically in lockdown. But the big joke is, like, Ari was bored. And he was, like, fell in love with the brand. You know, it's a really, really, really fun, energetic brand. That's purpose is to cultivate kindness.
We need that in Framingham.
I know, dude.
It is bullshit. Like, we need it.
I know.
Can you bring it?
You're saying cultivate kindness in the car wash?
No.
Or Seven Brew. Oh, okay.
Seven Brew's mission
is to
cultivate kindness. Like, why are they always, like, in the South?
Because it started in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And so they kind of started there and then worked their way out. So I think right now they're around 300 stands total. And, you know, continuing.
Why do you call it a stand?
Because it's a coffee stand. You don't go into it. It's not a shop.
Oh,
it's a
drive-through.
Double drive-through.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder, how does that affect like real estate to change what you're looking for?
Yeah, you need the space to do the turnaround. And it's kind of think of it like Chick-fil-A.
I love Chick-fil-A. I'd like without to think about
the
Chick-fil-A.
Inside, without understood. The
got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
How's it going?
It's going really well. Our first stands were in Florida, and you know, Florida is a unique market because I call it like easy living in Florida.
Yeah,
there's a lot of everything, and they do very well in the Midwest and you know in that area because there isn't a lot of cool flashy things there.
Yeah,
so got it. They're like, oh my God, what is this? What is this? Seven
There's
Brew.
Not like a Starbucks on every corner.
Correct. And they also love sweet things in the Midwest. Like nobody's really like diet conscious out there.
Right.
So, I mean.
That's America.
Yep.
Give America them some more you. Sweet coffee.
Yeah. And sweet tea.
Well, I was looking at the menu of the Seven Brew and it's just so cool.
20,000 flavor combinations.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah. How the hell does one even get to 20,000 flavor combinations?
Who knows? The menu's, it's a 20, big test.
That's tea. Wild.
It's like a 10-hour
test. Have you had the coffee?
Oh yeah.
You like it?
I don't, I drink black coffee. Cause once
boring. I, yeah. I drink black coffee. Yeah. I love black coffee.
Yeah.
I get a little said disturbed no with the inter, I don't, I like the taste of coffee.
Yeah.
I don't, I will take a flavor as a treat, but like, I don't necessarily want it.
Yeah. And I don't drink caffeine.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't drink caffeine because,
I don't get that.
Well, it's like my nervous system's just a little sensitive.
I don't got know it, got now it, got either. It. I like it kind of.
You'd like not drinking it.
I haven't
I
drank
don't
it in a little
I feel
while.
Anything from drinking it anymore.
Well, between like, the numb. Shits and the like in the crash and burn after the caffeine, I do better with that. I put electrolytes in my coffee.
Love electrolytes.
So I get the same buzz, but.
So, okay. Very interesting story. I'd like to talk a little bit about spirituality and being a psychic because that you are.
Yes.
Like very. Now here we are. What do you, when I always wanted to know, like, what do you see? What do you hear? Do you hear voices? Do you like, do you find that your psychic abilities have grown with time as you get
they've
older?
They've morphed with time. It's always a knowing for me. So I don't see things. I just know them to be true. And so if I have my hands on, it's different. So if I have my hands on somebody like in a session, then I'll see things like movies.
Okay, like a series of scenes.
Yeah. And they won't ever really make sense to me. So you kind of have to trust your own chops, like at the beginning and not be afraid to ask the questions. Like I see a man in a blue shirt and he has a green bow tie and curly.
You're doing that to me.
Curly.
I want that.
Brown hair. Like he's here. He's holding a red box. What does that mean to you? And you know what I mean? So
right, you
like,
have to repeat it and then you have to not be afraid. You sound crazy.
Right.
And then like see what they say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's other times where like I've seen you guys upstairs and been like, come here. How are you feeling? Are you okay? What's happening? You know what I mean? Cause I knew something
I hate
was happening.
You. You mean like when you put me into labor?
Well, you asked me to.
Yes, I know. But thank God you did because if Sadie got any bigger, my God.
Yeah.
I don't know what that delivery would have looked like.
Yeah. So, it's always like when I was little, like 10 years old, I used to see my, well, sorry, he died when I was 10. So 11, 12, I used to see my grandfather all the time. All the time.
Like in front of you or
yeah,
in your
like
head?
I would be walking like in my grandparents' kitchen and I would look up the stairs and he'd be at the top of the stairs tied in his bathing suit.
So you see dead people.
I mean, I can't. Yeah. Yeah.
You see. Dead. What's that from? Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
You.
I know he's in the closet. He goes, I see dead people.
I used to do that to me. She used to do that to me when I was little. She would, on her hands and knees, come into my room.
I would crawl into her room
and she'd say,
I would say, I'm going to kill you.
She used to do that to me when I was little. Where I'd pretend I was like a robot or
That's why I always used to sleep with the door closed. I hated when she came in.
It was definitely a weird thing looking back that I would do to her. For sure.
It's really.
You're older, right?
Yeah. I am. 3 years. I definitely don't have the ability you have, but I definitely have that knowing sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if like, I'm in tune with myself or my third eye, can I, and like, I bring myself to the point where I understand that, but I have ability when it comes to, it's going to be so weird. Text messages.
Yeah.
I always know when someone's texting me.
Oh, interesting.
I have that sometimes too.
Like literally I'm going 10 out of 10 times.
Oh, wow.
Like I'm holding, 9 out of 10. I'm holding my phone. I'm like, 1, 2, coming in.
No way.
I don't know why or how, but
like,
it
you
is
know,
very,
someone's texting. You don't know who it is.
No, I know who it is. Like, it is. It's not that I like saying that they're texting me. It's that like they pop into my mind.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think about them. And then the text message comes into my phone.
Cool.
Like I'm on their wavelength
or
something.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I hate that.
You are for sure.
That's very
like
odd.
Like, but by the way, we all have abilities.
I agree.
I mean, like if somebody feels like they have zero, they would just have to do more training.
Exactly.
But every single person, because we're all energy beings, and even like that description I just gave you of the guy, and that's just energy.
Yes.
Right? And that's how psychics get it fucked up, by the way, sometimes, right? You'll be like, oh, I went to the psychic. I don't know what they're talking about. This person doesn't exist or this hasn't happened yet. And they're just getting the time wrong. But the energy system of that person, place, or thing exists. They just may have messed it up on the time.
Well, if right? they're legit, yeah.
Well, even if they're not, even if they are legit, they can still mess up the 100%. Time.
No, I'm agreeing with you. Oh, like, right, I'm right, saying right. Like some aren't legit. Like they're just scams, but like.
For sure.
But there's so, I recently went to one and it was very interesting. You have to be open.
Yeah.
Too. Also, like you can't just be like, yeah, well, I'm not going to tell you anything and I'll wait and see.
Yes, because if your energy's closed, then they can't read your energy.
Well, yeah. If if you go into it as a skeptic and you're like, I'm going to test this person, it has to be, I think, a back and forth.
Well, not necessarily, because if the other person, if the psychic, quote unquote, can just do their job, they can still read it. But the reading will be way better if the other person's open.
Maybe that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You'll get even more information.
Right.
And it'll be more meaningful.
Before I got married, you did Reiki on me and you were like, there's a pin. I don't know what to tell you, but there's like a pin that's gonna come, like your grandfather. It's like he's sending a pin. And
like a pin?
Like you said a pin. Yeah, okay. You just randomly said that. And on the day of my wedding, Yes, I was given a lion pin the day of my wedding, but that's not what it was. I don't know what she is to me. I would say like our extended cousin, uh-huh. She's older. She had a pin that had like 6 diamonds in it. And the day of the wedding, she said, I want you to wear this to walk down the aisle.
Oh,
and
wow.
I pinned it to my dress and I was like, there's the pin. And it was very odd. I mean, like it was like, not odd. It was a synchronicity. It was just,
who gave you that?
Betty Ann.
Oh.
I lost it in the middle of the wedding.
Oh no.
It's very old and very expensive and somebody found it and said, I think you dropped a pin, but I wasn't wearing the pin. So the fact that they even knew the pin came from my dress was very odd. And the whole thing was just weird. It was like my grandfather was
with me. That is really weird.
Yeah. I mean, that types of stuff. Like I had a friend who asked, you know, to have a session with me and she had just recently been diagnosed. And so it was over Zoom with her and I can see her in a waiting room with like all these pictures above her with geometric patterns, right? So, but if that doesn't really mean anything, right? So I'm like, so then I have to ask, okay, well, what's the purpose? So I ask the universe, like, what's the purpose of you just telling me that, showing me that?
Right.
So, okay, I get the message. So I tell her, you're gonna know that you're in the right doctor's office when you see the geometric shapes. And so sure enough, 2 weeks later, and I forget, like I forgot the pin story. I forget people's stuff.
Of course, you're so present and how could you get involved in so many people's
things? I wouldn't want to hold on to it anyway. Right. So not for me.
Right.
And so she called me and she was like, you know, I just want to give you the update, blah, blah, blah. This is the doctor team I went with, blah, blah, blah. And his office was full of pictures with geometric shapes. That's how I knew I was in the right place. So like, it's really trippy. And sometimes, you know, the more you do it, the less you
are surprised
yourself. But like, it's still kind
of
cool.
It's a part of you.
Yeah.
It is cool.
Yeah.
How does spirituality shape how you are as a businesswoman? Like, do you ever find that like your spirituality conflicts with something you have to do business-wise?
Oh my God. Well, being in business with my husband, who's not necessarily like in on the plan of this healing path, he's getting closer. But, you know, we'll be in team meetings and he rages and my whole body's like breaking out in hives.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll send him a text message like WTF, what are you doing? And we'll have a back and forth about it. Like he'll be mad and I'll be like, well, I can't be on your team. If this was my job, I would quit. Right. Like I can't do that. These people are human beings, you know? So it's an ongoing thing with us.
Do you use the language like 5D? Is that how you
I don't use that language. I just talk. It's like interrelational therapy.
I think he'd be annoyed if she said that.
Oh my God. He'd be like, yeah, 5 year. No, what?
I mean, between me and you.
Oh, to be honest with you, for me, 5D, I don't really even know what people who use that term are referring to, but for me, it's like being plugged in to the universe.
That's what it is.
Okay.
It's basically like 3D is what's physically happening here.
Yeah.
Being in 4D is hovering and 5D is being above.
Oh, cool.
So basically in that scenario, my analyzation is that you were in 5D, he was in 3D, and you were saying to him, these are human beings. You have to see it from the plane.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
And you're like, come to 5D so you can see it with me. But he was rejecting in 4D. And then you finally probably brought him to 5.
Love that. Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
But you have to go in between 5D and 3D. I'll give you the book. It's actually super interesting, cool. But it's like, you have to go in between them. You can never stay in one. You can't live in 5D.
Right.
And you can't live in just 3.
Right.
But some people only live in 3.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
Yeah. So, you know, as a part of my kind of ongoing, like, learning about myself and getting in touch with myself, and accepting myself, all the parts of me, I am more able to be me, which is a spiritual being who's here to talk about my story and share my story and talk about feelings and call people out on their feelings and invite them to share their feelings in every aspect of my life. For a really long time,
it's all one, the personal and professional aspect for you.
For a long time, I felt like I had to compartmentalize, like Ashley the healer, Ashley the mom, Ashley the wife.
Too many.
Ashley the business person.
No, we just need Ashley.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't know that, like, it was okay to be me in all those places. Right.
Coming back full circle to
your mom,
thinking you're okay being you. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And so now, and this is why I reached out to Andrew the other day, we have an annual dinner for our executive team.
Executive, yep.
And their wives and all that, or spouses, I should say. And I am going to bring in like a meditation coach to teach them mind-body connection. And
beautiful.
How to take care of themselves. And because these people are working crazy hours and they don't know how to shut off.
Yeah, and eventually that will lead to burnout.
100%, because I know that to be true from my own experience. Yeah,
another full circle moment.
Another full circle, yeah.
You're just a circle.
I am. Well, we all are.
Just a circle.
Women especially. but yeah, so I feel like for me, the spiritual aspect of being is just who I am every day, all day.
Yeah.
And, you know, the business world, the men in business world may laugh a little bit when I talk about it. Like, cause I put my phone in do not disturb every day at 5 o'clock and I meditate for half an hour.
That's an interesting.
And if I'm really tired, I take a 20-minute nap.
Wow.
That's okay. If I have a headache or whatever. And then I'm back online at 6 and they're like, oh, I called you. And I was like, sorry, I was meditating. Anyway, go ahead. Like, I just have no problem saying it right now.
So it's funny. I'm at that phase in my life right now where I just like say it.
Yeah.
And I definitely can. I think I'm at the point too where I've blocked out reactions in a way. Yeah. Like, I don't even care what people think. I'm like, yeah, I was. And that's probably weird to people. But like, I'm at this point where I'm like unapologetically myself.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, if like that resonates with you, like we vibe. If it doesn't, like we don't. Yeah. I'm like, I wish you the best, but like fuck off. Yeah, also.
I've
so like
been that way.
Me?
No, me.
You, oh yeah, you've definitely always been that
way. I don't know, just like I can't, it's like a problem.
Why it's not a problem. No, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's just you got to find the people that get it.
Yeah.
That's really all it is, the people that resonate.
Girls,
people that are soul busy.
You've got enough people in your life. It's not like you don't have people.
Well, that's the thing. It's like how many people can you give 100% to is what we talk about a lot. You know, it's like just there's a boundary. There's a cap to that.
Yep.
A very interesting episode.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this
conversation. I feel like we talked about so much that
our story is beautiful though.
Thank you.
It is. And like, I'm really glad you told it in this way on this platform. And obviously like, I think everybody should read your book.
Is it on Audible?
Yeah.
Is it you?
Maybe I'll do that. No, it's not me.
Damn it.
Aww.
I couldn't get through reading it without crying.
Oh, is it a girl?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll listen to it.
Yeah. Well, that must be really hard to listen to.
I've listened to the book. She has a little. She has a little pronunciation issues every now and then. Well, because like Greek names. But yeah, she did a good job.
So you can get the book, The Unspoken, on Amazon.
Correct.
An Amazon bestseller.
Yes.
By the way, we can support one mission.
Yep.
And all the amazing things you've done for families.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, Cumberland Farms. Get a coffee and just think of Ashley, or get a coffee at Seven Brewing in Florida.
Yep.
And get a car wash, you know, just like go to Water Whiz, get a little car wash, a little water here, a little water there, like all the things. But I think mainly my takeaway is just like your resilience and your persistence is just really beautiful, but also the way you reflect and learn from each step.
Yeah.
yeah. I found very interesting in this conversation.
Thank you.
You're very connected.
I love hanging out with you guys, and I love, you know, talking about this stuff with people who get it.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of people are willing to be authentic and, you know, vulnerable. So it's kind of like my superpower. I'll tell anybody anything if I feel like it's going to help them.
Me too.
I get that. No shame.
Yeah.
Just like living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Thanks for being here. We love you.
Love you.
Rock on.